It's here and now. Monday marks the one-year anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, an estimated 285 deaths, $65 billion in damages. On Monday, we'll hear about the tough emotional recovery. But what about infrastructure? Yesterday, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell announced $162 million in funding for 45 storm protection projects from North Carolina to New England to help restore marshes, wetlands, and shorelines. And on Monday, New York University's Institute for Public Knowledge, in partnership with the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the President's Hurricane Sandy Task Force, will announce the winners of the Rebuild by Design competition. The winning design might actually get built. So where are we on rebuilding after Sandy? New York University professor Eric Kleinenberg is heading that competition. He joins us now. And Eric, start with small things first. One thing you're pushing for is instead of special storm shelters, you say build more libraries. Explain.
Well, it turns out after a big disaster, people need someplace to go. Think about this. You are in the midst of an extraordinary crisis. It's so profound that the systems in your city have shut down. You don't have power. You might not have water. You don't have communications. Is that the moment when you want to go into some strange, random public institution that you've never spent time in before, one that's likely to be overwhelmed by people with real needs and problems and that might not be capable of giving you what you need? Or is that the moment when you want to go to a place that you feel comfortable in and familiar with, a place where you know the faces and are likely to see a lot of your neighbors? It's kind of a no-brainer.
Well, this isn't just some nice thought that you have. You actually did research on this after the heat wave in Chicago that killed so many. What'd you find?
I looked at pairs of neighborhoods that demographically look almost identical, that share a border. They're literally right next to each other, and they had dramatically different outcomes during the heat wave. The difference was not that one place was hotter. The difference was that safer places had stronger social infrastructures, public places from libraries to mom-and-pop stores and coffee shops that drew people out of their homes and into social contact. Those resources so dramatically improve the quality of our life on a regular day, but when there's a heat wave or a hurricane or some other disaster, they can make the difference between life and death. And in the Chicago heat wave, they did.
So it wasn't living nearer to the police station or having firemen come faster. It was neighborhoods that were the same in their income level, but one might have a store that everybody gravitated towards.
That's right, because the first responders in a disaster are not the police officers or the firemen. The first responders are your neighbors. And another thing I've learned over the years is that if there's a heat wave, for instance, and a city opens up cooling centers in random buildings that no one uses in normal times, no one will go. I can't tell you how many articles I've read about empty cooling centers. That's not the solution to this.
Well, the New York Times followed you recently. You were in Brooklyn at the Red Hook Initiative. This is a youth center, a community center. And you were there in your capacity as research director for the Rebuild by Design competition. This is organized by President Obama's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. What were you having architects and designers look at?
Yeah, this is such an exciting competition. We had 148 design teams from around the world apply to come up with innovative solutions to deal with the threats of climate change. And there are 10 teams that are finalists that are doing their projects now. I took them to the Red Hook Initiative because it's an example of a community institution adapting its mission and changing the way its space worked during the crisis to become a relief operation. And they wound up serving thousands and thousands of people in that neighborhood because the staff knew the place well, residents of the community felt very comfortable and at home there, and because the design of the building allowed them to change the space according to the acute needs of that situation.
So you're saying for designers designing community centers, whether they are libraries or this is sort of an outreach to young people, or churches or malls, to keep in mind that if it's a community center where people like to go, what can you do to also make it a place people will go to in a time of emergency?
You nailed it. Every neighborhood in this country should have a designated emergency safe space. And it will work well if it's also a place that people use in their lives every day or every week. And if we can do that right, we can do something amazing, not just protecting ourselves from the next crisis, but also improving the quality of our lives and our communities all the time.
What are some of the designs in that competition? You say they're working on them now, but can you give us an idea of some of the things that people are thinking of?
Well, look, people are looking at everything from sophisticated systems to shore up our ecosystems and prevent major storm surges, to community resilience centers, to softer, more natural infrastructure, things like oyster reefs and mussel beds and marshes and wetlands, which we can use to improve the quality of our waterways and keep ourselves a little bit more safe.
We heard about a lot of things in a terrific New Yorker article you wrote after Sandy called adaptation, this idea of better planning. It's only been a year, but are things going into place? Are people raising up electrical grids so that they're not underwater? Are they thinking about ways to keep water out of areas? Those are huge projects usually, you know, gates and things that might try to keep water out. Are they thinking, bring the water in and let's do more with it?
We're still thinking. This is a very tough one. And in a way, we're right to be sober and careful about the way we develop these projects. We can't just build back what we had before. We have to build forward in anticipation of the kinds of extreme weather we'll get as the sea level rises and the conditions become more extreme. So we haven't built the giant sea gate. We haven't rebuilt our infrastructure. But we're going to need a more flexible, adaptable, and smarter grid for our power system, that's for sure. We're going to need more resilient communications infrastructure so that our phones and mobile phones and internet don't go down every time the weather's extreme. We're going to need to find some way to keep our subway systems from massively flooding when the water comes in. These are major infrastructure investments, many billion dollars, and unfortunately, they're not ready yet.
Well, but in the meantime, in a very simplified form, one of the messages is open more branch libraries as places that people will want to go to instead of sitting and dying in the heat in their apartment if there's an electrical outage or drowning in their homes if there's a flood. But in the meantime, people are closing libraries because of budget cuts, and more people are moving to live on the water, and more libraries are closing.
Boy, you've really laid out the challenge that we face. Look, if you think about the response we made to September 11th, the kind of investment we made in homeland security and national security, we are now at the moment when we have to make that kind of commitment to the threats from climate change, not just into the hard infrastructure, but also into the social infrastructure. And the nice thing about investing in climate security and through social infrastructure is that the residual benefit is that we could dramatically improve the quality of life in these places all the time, regardless of the weather. And it's that kind of intelligent design that we desperately need at this moment.
That's Eric Kleinenberg, sociologist, urban studies expert, and professor of sociology at New York University. Eric, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So, how are you doing post-Sandy? Are you dreading the anniversary early next week? Let us know at hereandnow.org. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Charles River Apparel. Over a quarter century of creating apparel for corporations and athletic teams, based in New England and family-owned. Learn more at charlesriverapparel.com. And Constant Contact, offering small businesses online tools like social media, event, and email marketing from one login at constantcontact.com.